welcome newly boarded passengers to this West Coast Express service from London to Swansea. My name is Meredith, and I'm your train superintendent and officially designated guide and comforter. In a few moments, we'll be passing the site of Penderyn's Fountain. We apologise to passengers for the late running of this train and hope this does not cause you any inconvenience. In the interest of efficiency and punctuality, I should also inform you the train is now running approximately 11 minutes late.
Time Added On for Injuries by Alan Plater, with Alan David as Meredith and James Bolam as Fanshawe.
In a few moments, we'll be passing the site of Penderyn's Fountain. We apologise to passengers for the late running of this train and hope this does not cause you any inconvenience. In the interest of efficiency and punctuality, I should also inform you the train is now running approximately 11 minutes late.
Tickets, please.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, madam. Enjoy your journey.
Tickets, please.
Thank you very much, sir. Enjoy your journey.
Tickets, please.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your journey.
Excuse me, may I ask you a question?
Most certainly you may. I am your officially designated guide and comforter.
Yes, I know. So you said.
So you must feel free to put your question.
A few miles back, you said we were passing the site of Penderyn's Fountain.
Yes, I did say that, but only because at the time we were indeed passing the site of Penderyn's Fountain.
Would the Penderyn in question be Dick Penderyn?
The martyr of the Merthyr riots?
Is that the man you're referring to?
The same.
How extraordinary.
Indeed it is.
Is it? I know it's extraordinary for me, but why is it extraordinary for you?
It's extraordinary for me because I've been working this route for over 5 years now, and every time we pass that spot, I say we are now passing the site of Penderyn's Fountain. And you are the first person ever to show any interest whatsoever. Indeed, it's doubly extraordinary because unless my ears are deceiving me, you are English.
I am English and I am interested. Dick Penderyn is the main purpose of my journey.
Well, I hope you weren't hoping to meet him. He died over 170 years ago.
I'm well aware of that. It relates directly to my business. You're obviously an expert on Penderyn.
Oh, I don't know about an expert. It's part of my heritage, you might say. I mean, proper heritage, not souvenir fudge and tea towers.
Might you be able to spare me some time? I'd be happy to give you lunch.
Well, it's my day off tomorrow, and I could skip my compulsory aerobics.
Compulsory aerobics?
The company sends us. It's intended to get us in good shape, to say tickets please and enjoy your journey.
Sounds like a corporate strategy.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, we're not supposed to call them tickets. We're supposed to call them travel documents, but a ticket is a ticket in my little universe.
I wouldn't want you to get into trouble with the company.
There are ways and means of dealing with railway companies.
Why not just tell them you're having lunch with a man from Whitehall?
A man from Whitehall? Well, well. This really is an extraordinary day. I shall check some more tickets to help me calm down. Then I shall return to finalise our arrangements for lunch.
Tickets, please.
Thank you, sir.
Enjoy your journey.
Tickets, please.
Thank you, madam.
Enjoy your journey.
How was your lunch?
Surprising, but delicious.
Why surprising?
Usually when I have fish, it lies there on the plate, shaped like a fish. I didn't expect it to be shaped like a sausage roll. And the grapes were a bit of a shock to me.
But delicious.
Totally. Forgive the rudeness, but is Whitehall paying for this?
Don't worry, Whitehall will pay, Mr. Meredith.
Meredith.
Forgive me, Mr. Meredith.
Forgiven.
Let me explain what I'm doing in Wales. I'm working for the government's newly created Conciliation Commission.
I don't think I've heard of that.
That's because we're newly created.
Of course. It takes a while for these things to catch on.
But you may have noticed over the last few years a new fashion among governments and other institutions to apologise for things they've done in the past. The Australians apologise to the Aboriginal people, the Catholic Church apologises for the Inquisition, the Americans apologise to their native population, and goodness knows who else will get involved once the Americans start apologising, and so on. The list is growing day by day.
I'm not surprised. When you look at the world, there's an awful lot of apologising called for.
And the British government is well aware of the fact.
Westminster's wanting to say sorry?
Except that being British, or, to be precise, English, we are proceeding cautiously.
Very wise. Recklessness can be deadly.
Along with some of my colleagues, we are preparing a discussion document, which will be examined by a parliamentary subcommittee who will make recommendations which might or might not lead to legislation.
You've got to find out whether an apology is called for.
Yes. And very nicely put, if I may say so.
But how can I help you? I mean, I'm grateful for the fish, but I'd hate to think I'd eaten it under false pretenses.
I am here to see whether an apology is called for in the matter of Dick Penderyn.
You said you and your colleagues. How many of you are busy with this class of work?
At the moment, about half a dozen of us. Our main focus is the early part of the Industrial Revolution. There were several unfortunate incidents at that time. In Wales, Scotland, the north of England. The Peterloo Massacre in Manchester and the Tolpuddle Martyrs, of course. There was a coal miner called Jobling who was publicly executed during a strike in the northeast. Our Geordie friends are putting us under a lot of pressure about that one.
And Dick Penderyn.
Precisely. Oh. Do you mind?
Please feel free. I thought those things only worked on trains.
Hello, Fanshawe speaking. I'm sorry, I'm in a meeting at the moment.
Fanshawe?
I'll try and get back to you at the end of the afternoon. Goodbye.
Did you say Fanshawe?
I did, but only, as you might put it, because it's my name. Why?
When I take you for your conducted tour, there's something I'd like to show you.
That's very intriguing.
It's all part of what my grandfather used to call the mystery of history.
Was he an historian?
Bless you, no. He was a railway man, like me, an engine driver, in the days when engines had to be driven. Steam, you know. But he had a long memory. I think it's a national characteristic. Not much we can do about it.
Would you like more coffee?
No, thank you. I think we should go about our business now, don't you?
So, what do we know about Dick Penderyn?
What do we know?
What I mean is, I know what I know, based on the official records.
You know what Whitehall knows?
Yes, that's a fair summation.
Well, I only know what's been handed down.
Exactly. We need to establish whether there's any common ground between us.
So, what's the Whitehall version?
The received view is that Penderyn was a political agitator, active during the Merthyr riots, sentenced to death for murder, and publicly executed. How does that coincide with your view? Do we have common ground?
I agree he was publicly executed. I don't really agree about any of the rest of it.
Well, tell me your version of the rest of it, Mr. Meredith.
My version goes like this. At the beginning of the 1830s, two things happened. The price of bread went up, and the price of iron went down.
Quite so, it's on the record.
The government of the day took remedial action, which made everything a damn sight worse. That's what governments tend to do. There were hunger riots. The militia moved in. Penderyn was one of our leaders. A charismatic man with a silver tongue and, so we're told, an eye for the ladies. And maybe not just an eye.
Now, this isn't history you're telling me, this is legend.
We're a Celtic race, Mr. Fanshawe. We prefer legend. He was our freedom fighter.
That's a familiar line. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
I know, and there's nothing you can do about that. According to our legend, Penderyn was arrested on a trumped-up murder charge, tried, sentenced, and executed in the full public gaze as an example to the poor, the starving, and the downtrodden. This, said the authorities, is what happens if you object to being poor, starving, and downtrodden.
But this all happened within a couple of years of the French Revolution.
I know.
And the government was terrified that the same thing could happen here.
The dreaded influence of the French. One minute we start rolling up our fish and garnishing it with grapes. The next minute we're executing the aristocracy. Yes, it's a very short step.
I think that's a touch facetious, if I may say so.
Yes, it is. Do forgive me. And don't get me wrong about the French. I like them. I love the way they play rugby. They'd rather play beautifully and lose than win with ugliness and violence.
Are you implying that other people, the English perhaps, prefer to win with ugliness and violence?
Ah, I need to think about that. And are you talking about rugby, or are you talking about the Merthyr riots?
I might be talking about both.
That's often the case. You think you're talking about one thing, and you're actually talking about something else. I sometimes think everything is all part of the same big thing.
Only connect.
I'm sorry?
A famous quotation from E.M. Forster.
A rugby player?
A writer. He argued that everything in the world is ultimately connected to everything else. And only by making these connections could we understand the pattern of human existence.
Sounds like a smart chap.
He was, most certainly.
Making connections. Like on the railway. If you make the right connections, you can travel from Carmarthen in Wales to Inverness in Scotland, or at least you could when I left work yesterday. So yes, I understand about your man Forster making his connections.
But it isn't just places. It isn't just ideas. It's people, too. We are all interconnected. Even you and I, who only met yesterday, are connected.
That is certainly true. And I will prove it to you before the day is out, once we have dealt with the matter of Dick Penderyn's fountain. And here we are.
There now. You are standing, as far as can be ascertained, on the sacred site of Penderyn's fountain. When he was on the run, pursued by the militia, it is believed he drank from the waters of the fountain and was given food by the local people.
We're in the middle of a car park, Mr. Meredith.
The fountain was on a hill. Most of the hill was removed in the middle of the last century to make room for the railway. And they've taken the rest of it away to make room for the car park that will serve the leisure complex.
Is that the leisure complex I see under construction?
Not just any old leisure complex. The Owain Glyndŵr Millennium Leisure Complex.
Owain Glyndŵr?
The developers had a focus group of local people answering questions from pretty girls with clipboards. My cousin told me it was a damn close-run thing between Nye Bevan, Dylan Thomas and Shirley Bassey, until Glyndŵr made a late run on the rails and won by a short head.
You're very well informed.
I've got a cousin on the council. I don't know how it works in London, but in Wales, a cousin on the council is a priceless asset.
What's going to be in this place when it's finished? Does anyone know?
Oh, yes. We've all been sent our brochures. Here, I brought you a copy, complete with an illustrated map.
That's very kind. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
You'll see, we're getting a multiplex cinema, a burger bar, a sushi bar, an internet cafe, and several major retail outlets, all neatly grouped in zones.
Yes, I couldn't help noticing the zones.
All colour-coded as a help to the slow-witted.
What's this one? A religious zone?
They're planning an interdenominational drop-in centre for the spiritually battered. Though, according to my cousin, it'll be more or less a shed with a coffee machine.
But what does your cousin have to say about this, the Industrial Heritage Museum?
That it will be a museum.
So the Industrial Revolution, though gone, will not be forgotten.
Apparently, we will be able to experience in virtual reality what it was like to work in a coal mine or a steelworks while sitting in a chair in a darkened room and at a nominal charge yet to be determined.
Amazing.
All digitally enhanced.
It all sounds like arrant nonsense to me.
To me too. But we've been importing nonsense for centuries. It isn't going to stop now just because we think it's silly. Your people in Whitehall can't do anything about it. It's the market imperative, or capitalism, as my father and grandfather used to call it. Hardly anyone talks about that, no.
Isn't it all rather patronising? Even an insult to the men who worked in the mines and the steelworks.
Of course it is, but the workers are used to insults. And you could argue it's better to be digitally enhanced than publicly executed. Maybe we're moving forward an inch or two.
But we might have to make the best of a bad job.
In what way?
The Industrial Heritage Museum might be an appropriate site for the plaque.
Plaque? What plaque is this? There's been no mention of plaque so far.
The tentative plan is that once the apologies have been made, probably in this case by way of a statement by a government minister to the Welsh Assembly, a series of plaques will be put up at appropriate sites across the country, bearing the date of the apology and explaining the significance of the place. In this case, the site of Penderyn's fountain. In a sense, we would be confirming the apology in writing.
I'm not so sure about that. We're Welsh. We'll believe anything until it's confirmed in writing. Then we stop believing it. And how many plaques are you planning?
We have no precise figure in mind.
You see, our man Penderyn, he was on the run for some time, and because he was our hero, we all wanted to claim him. Within a 5-mile radius of where we're standing, I know of a Penderyn stream, Penderyn's valley, Penderyn's rock, Penderyn's chapel, and at least 3 more fountains. Across the whole of South Wales, there are probably 200 or 300 such places. That's a lot of plaques. And think of all the unveiling ceremonies. You'll run short of civic dignitaries.
Let's go back to first base, Mr. Meredith. What precise historical evidence is there that Penderyn set foot in any of these places?
None whatsoever.
In which case, supposing we erect 1 token plaque? We could erect it here, in the Industrial Heritage Museum of the Owen Glendower Leisure Centre. Symbolically, it would stand for all the other places Penderyn visited during the last weeks of his life.
I don't think that would work.
Why ever not?
Because there'd be hell to pay in all the places that didn't get a plaque.
But didn't you tell me on the train that nobody ever takes any interest in Penderyn?
I did say that. But if you draw attention to it with your apologies and your plaques, you see, they'll all be interested. Every valley in South Wales will demand a plaque. And, failing that, an apology for the absence of a plaque.
This is an impossible country.
Well, I know that. You should try living here.
But thank you for being so generous with your time, Mr. Meredith. You've given me more than enough information to make my report.
Good.
So, if you'd be kind enough to drive me back to my hotel, and I, that's to say the government, will reimburse you for your petrol.
Oh, but I haven't finished yet. Didn't I tell you there was something else I had to show you? What you might call the Fanshawe connection.
So you did. Will it take long?
We have to drive to the top of that hill, and there I will show you a little more of the mystery of our history. Mr. Fanshawe. Isn't that a fine view of the town?
Yes, very impressive.
Though it would look prettier without the improvements, I think.
Why have you brought me here?
Turn round. Look behind you. Now tell me what you see.
A housing estate.
Desirable semi-detached houses for young executives. Type A and Type B. The Type B have a through lounge and an extra lavatory on the ground floor.
Thank you. I read the property pages. I have a reasonable working knowledge of housing developments of that kind.
Until 5 years ago, that was farmland. Green belt. Then, according to my cousin, a discreet transaction took place with key members of the planning committee. But that's not the point.
What is the point?
Over 160 years ago, that land was farmed by a man called Meredith.
Your family?
My great-great-great-grandfather. I might be wrong about the number of greats, but most certainly he was my blood ancestor. And one day, he was working in that field, turning the hay, when into the field rode a man on a horse. The man was from the railway company. He had come to explain that Mr. Brunel was going to build an east-west railway from London to Wales. Further than that, his business was, as you might say, a matter of time.
That is why I'm here. Mm-hmm. Every town and every village along Mr. Brunel's new railway line will adopt London time. When it is 12 noon in London, it will also be 12 noon in Bristol, Cardiff, Swansea and beyond, until we reach the sea.
Everybody will have London's time.
Everybody will have London's time.
But what will you do about the sun?
We won't do anything about the sun.
What you have to understand is that my great-great-great-grandfather could neither read nor write nor tell the time from a clock or watch. But you'll have 2 noons, like I said before. There'll be one when the sun's at its highest, and another one when both your hands are sticking up in the air.
They won't like that in the village, you know. No disrespect. But they might mark you down as some sort of lunatic.
Look, this is no doubt fascinating, but what has it got to do with me?
Because the farmer's name was Meredith, like I told you, and the man on the horse was called Fanshawe.
Fanshawe?
Quite so.
Oh, my God, this all rings a bell. Tell me what happened next.
Well, as the story was handed on to me, Mr. Fanshawe from the railway company was not pleased to be called a lunatic and defended his position.
I'm helping to transform the world. What could be more important than that?
I tell you what's more important than transforming the world, leaving it the way you found it. And seemingly, they had a big argument about that. My man said the coal mines and iron foundries had brought nothing but misery, and there was no reason to expect the railways would be any better. And your man said...
I expect my man said it was the new age of reason, and the inventions of men like Brunel would change the world out of all recognition.
Yes, he was very precise about his predictions.
A world without hard physical labour. A world of increased leisure, where men can devote their time to cultural pursuits and to the finer things of life. Music, painting, literature. Men will no longer be content as mere peasants.
Music, painting, literature.
The Owen Glendower Millennium Leisure Complex.
So much for predictions.
This is all somewhat eerie. I think I know what happened next, but I need to know your version of what happened next.
Well, what brought your ancestor into the field in the first place? Am I right, he was your ancestor?
I think he almost certainly was.
Well, what brought him into the field in the first place was that he was lost. And my ancestor promised your ancestor that at the end of his day's work in the field, he would guide him into the village. There he was going to explain the railway company's plans to the local bigwigs.
Your cousin's ancestors?
It could well be. Though, of course, in those days, they were self-elected, landed gentry and clergymen mostly. There was no democracy as we know it.
I know. It had travelled as far as France, but no further. And it didn't reach this country for another 100 years because of the wicked capitalists. Is that your reading of the mystery, Mr. Meredith?
Remarkably close, Mr. Fanshawe.
And here we are, standing where those two men stood 160 years ago.
Except, of course, your man didn't stand being as he was on horseback.
Two men utterly divided in their philosophies.
Alpha and Omega, you might say. Your man believes in the power of reason.
Yes, I'm sure he did.
And my man, a mere peasant, believes in the legend that 10 years earlier Dick Penderyn drank from the fountain on a nearby hill. Maybe it isn't a fountain, and maybe Penderyn never drank from it, but if I believe it, doesn't that make it true? You believe in machines that milk cows. I believe in Penderyn's fountain.
Heaven protect me from the Celtic imagination.
I think heaven is doing very well by you in that respect, Mr. Fanshawe.
And you may believe what you will, but when the railway comes, the hill will go, and with it the fountain, and with it the legend.
No, not the legend. The rest, yes, that will go, but not the legend. Even if it never happened, especially if it never happened. And then they set off down the hill and into the village. Except that your man, your ancestor, your great-great-great-grandfather, perhaps...
Probably.
He never arrived. Now, let me show you something. It's a copy of an old press cutting from a newspaper of the month of June in the year of 1840.
A body found at the foot of Corodic Hill has been identified as that of Mr. James Fanshawe of London, an employee of Mr. Isambard Kingdom Brunel's railway company. He had apparently fallen from his horse while riding down a path leading to the nearby village. The last person to see him alive was Mr. Glyn Meredith, a local farm worker, who had given Mr. Fanshawe directions to the village and warned him the path was slippery because of heavy showers the night before. The horse was unharmed. Sad story. But at least the horse survived.
Ever since then, this place has been known to the local population as Fanshawe's Leap.
So my family is part of local legend, too.
Indeed you are.
I'm deeply moved.
And your ancestor might well be entitled to a plaque, along with Dick Penderyn.
I don't see why. It isn't as if an apology is called for.
But I think it is. You see, it wasn't entirely an accident.
How do you mean?
Apparently, my great-great-great-grandfather, when he was a very old man, would tell the story of Fanshawe's Leap to his grandchildren. He would show them that press cutting, which, of course, he couldn't read, being illiterate. And then he would say to them, did he fall, or was he pushed? And then he would wink at them.
May we be very clear about this? You are telling me that your ancestor murdered my ancestor.
That is exactly what I am telling you. Except I think the family, that's to say our family, more likely looked upon it as political assassination.
Well, that's ludicrous.
Oh, no. It was political assassination. As was the public execution of Dick Penderyn. The cause was the same in both cases. My family was saying to your man Fanshawe, we don't want anything to do with your industrial revolution. And the London government was saying to Dick Penderyn, you're going to have the industrial revolution whether you want it or not.
All right, fine. I've heard your confession. What do you want? Absolution? Forgiveness?
I don't want forgiveness. Why should I want forgiveness? I haven't said I'm sorry. In the same situation 160 years ago, I'd have done the very same thing.
Are you telling me I shouldn't go too near the edge, or I might go the same way?
No. No, there's no danger of repetition. I don't have the temperament of an assassin.
I'm relieved to hear it.
I will drive you down into the town, and we will have a cup of tea. Sugar?
No, thank you.
A very congenial spot, don't you think?
Very comfortable. I was intrigued by the name above the door as we came in.
Puccini's Pizzeria and Bagel Bar.
It seems an odd combination, from a culinary point of view.
Ah. The first Signor Puccini, no relation, by the way, was an Italian prisoner of war who stayed on and opened this place as an ice cream parlour. We used to come here in our teens. It was the only place we could meet girls without worrying our parents. Signor Puccini's son, Alfredo, took over the place and married Esther, who is Jewish and a superb cook.
Sounds like a formidable combination.
They are, believe me.
Do they have children?
Three. All of them devout skeptics who can sing in four languages.
Amazing.
And look at the menu. Oh,
looks a perfectly straightforward menu to me.
Minestrone with creplech.
Creplech?
Little dumplings.
Oh, I see what you mean. I don't think I've ever encountered a pizza made with chopped liver.
And today's special. Hot pastrami on rye with a side order of gnocchi.
I'm sure it's unique.
Not only unique. Epoch-making. The shape of things to come. The rainbow coalition of catering.
Well, that's pitching it a bit high.
Not at all. This is what we should be doing.
We?
Yes. You and me, Mr. Fanshawe.
You think we should open a restaurant?
No, I don't mean that. You're being deliberately facetious, Mr. Fanshawe, and it's bad enough when I do that. No, we should be heeding their example.
I'm certainly not going to marry you. Or am I being facetious again?
Imagine the moment. Alfredo meets Esther, and they fall in love. You can see the problem.
I can see nothing else but problems.
You've got one tradition that doesn't allow graven images, and another that allows very little else.
They obviously resolved the problems. Otherwise, they wouldn't now be serving chicken soup with ravioli.
Precisely. Alfredo could well have said to Esther, I'd like to marry you, but first you owe me an apology for crucifying Jesus Christ. And Esther could have said to Alfredo, I'd like to marry you. But first, you owe me an apology for a couple of thousand years of pogroms and persecution. And we won't even ask where the Pope was during the Holocaust. If they'd got into all that nonsense, they'd have spent all their lives beating each other over the head with apologies and plaques. And they'd have ended up too old and exhausted to get married.
Better to make love and pizzas with chopped liver.
Which is what they did.
But I don't see what this has to do with our situation, Mr. Meredith.
Alfredo and Esther entered into an agreement. They said, history begins today. Life is too short and precious to be fighting about what happened 2,000 years ago.
But you can't ignore history. It isn't all bad. You may disapprove of the Catholic Church, but it did give us the Sistine Chapel. What would you do with Michelangelo's ceiling? Whitewash over it?
Of course not. You don't whitewash over the music of things. That's the bit you celebrate. Some jolly good songs came out of the two world wars. Keep the home fires burning, Roses of Picardy, the Chattanooga choo-choo.
Yes, I'm sure we can both think of lots of jolly good songs.
Start singing them anywhere, people join in.
I know. They're buried deep in the great collective folk memory.
But you don't start wars because you think it's time for some good new songs, do you?
Can we stop talking about songs, for God's sake?
Certainly we can. Mind you, it's never easy in Wales. We're great ones for songs. But the floor's yours, Mr. Fanshawe. You're the one on the fact-finding mission.
All right. Let us accept your proposition. History starts today. I'm supposed to report back to Whitehall on the desirability or otherwise of an official apology for the execution of Dick Penderyn. If history starts today, what does that mean? That Penderyn wasn't executed at all? Or maybe that he didn't exist at all?
I'm saying it doesn't matter a damn. You're on a fool's errand.
Thank you very much.
But you're not the fool. It was the fool who sent you.
So when I return to the fool who sent me, what should I tell him?
Tell him to find something useful to do. Instead of making lists of people the government should apologize to, you can't make such a list. It would be too long. There's no sheet of paper big enough to hold all the names. Besides, we won't believe you.
You won't believe the apology?
Of course not.
On what grounds? Are you saying the apology wouldn't be sincere?
It's a matter of principle. We don't believe governments. They tell lies. Homes for heroes. Peace in our time. The miners are the enemy within. We've heard them all. And we say, ha, ha, ho, ho, on with the fun.
And if I give you my word...
Look, you're a nice man who bought me an excellent lunch. But I won't believe you either. Buying me the lunch makes it harder to believe you as it happens. I feel as if I've been bribed. And I'm not even sure you believe yourself.
Heaven preserve me from the Welsh.
You're not the first person to say that.
You're prejudiced and opinionated.
That's where they say it.
Constantly moaning about the misery of your lot.
Oh, yes, we love a good moan.
You've taken victim status and elevated it into a high art form.
We try to turn everything into a high art form. In four-part harmony, for preference.
I don't know why we bother with you at all.
We didn't ask you to bother with us in the first place. It was your idea.
My idea?
Well, not yours personally, but what I can only describe, and I don't mean to be offensive, but what I can only describe as the English.
Beware Englishmen bearing gifts.
Precisely. And we did our best. We tried. We pushed your ancestor off a cliff, but it didn't make any difference. There were lots more where he came from.
I believe we came. That's to say, my ancestors came with the best of intentions.
No, you didn't. You came because there was coal under the ground and a ready supply of cheap labour.
It was the age of reason. We believed it was the way forward.
You were empire builders.
All the nations were empire builders. The French, the Spanish, the Dutch.
You took Shakespeare and pretty beads to the natives and stole what there was to steal with a clear conscience.
We accept. Mistakes were made.
But you won't accept the big mistake.
What big mistake?
The thing itself. The Industrial Revolution.
Oh, we can't apologize for that.
In which case, don't apologize at all.
The Industrial Revolution was an inevitable force. It was outside of anyone's control. It would be like God apologizing for the flood.
It was controlled by the coal owners and the ironmasters and the railway companies and their lackeys in the ruling class. Millions of people died in its cause. Millions more lived in misery and degradation. You don't fix that with an apology and a plaque. The Industrial Revolution was an aberration. I'm glad it's over. Mind you, I'm a bit nervous about whatever comes along next. There's sure to be something.
There is. It's here. The information revolution. The web. The internet.
Information.
I suppose you're against that as well.
Well, I'm not against it. I'm not in favour of it. It's just information. We leave a note on the doorstep giving the milkman the information that we'd like 2 pints of semi-skim milk. And he leaves us 2 pints of semi-skim milk. We could email him, but the milk wouldn't taste any better.
You're a Luddite.
No doubt. If I'd been around at the time, I'd have certainly been a Luddite. They'd probably have made me branch secretary.
But you can't live without information.
But I've got enough to be going on with. I don't need any more.
Well, this is another revolution that is going to happen. And if it offends your Celtic soul, that's tough. There's nothing to be done about it.
So why not apologize in advance?
Because there's no evidence that any apology will be needed this time.
No, there probably won't be too much in the way of public executions, I'll grant you that. But you could apologize just in case. You might have got your sums wrong. It's possible.
Oh, this is ludicrous. I'm not here to see whether an apology is due for something that hasn't happened yet. I'm here to see whether an apology is due for something that happened 170 years ago.
And we've established that an apology is due, but it would be a total waste of time making it because you wouldn't believe it and neither would we, and you'd be apologising for the wrong thing anyway.
So I might as well go back to London first thing in the morning.
Unless there's something in your orders from Whitehall that you're keeping secret.
You know at least as much as I do.
But if you're staying overnight, I'd like to offer you an invitation.
What sort of invitation?
Well, I've been rude, belligerent and opinionated, as befits a Welshman, as well as confessing to a long-forgotten murder that apparently links our families. That's how it seems to me. Is that how it seems to you?
Yes, that's exactly how it seems to me.
Whereas we like to think of ourselves as a warm and hospitable nation.
You keep a welcome in the hillsides?
Allegedly. That being so, I'd like to invite you for a drink. At my club this evening.
There's another pint for you, Mr. Funshaw.
Thank you. William's Special Brew. Is this Welsh beer?
It was, once upon a time. Now it's made under license in either Milton Keynes or Denmark. But it is commendably strong, I think you'll find.
And that being so, I'd like to clarify one or two things before I drink too much more of it.
I'm here to clarify, Mr. Funshaw.
This is a Welsh language club.
Yes, that is why the people are speaking Welsh.
But my ears tell me that is an Irish ceilidh band.
Yes, it is an Irish ceilidh band. This is a charity night, a fundraiser.
In aid of?
Well, I could tease you and say it's in aid of burning down houses, but it isn't. It's for the oppressed fruit pickers of Southern California, most of them Mexican immigrants.
So, I am drinking Welsh beer made under license in Milton Keynes or Denmark in the Welsh Language Club, while an Irish ceilidh band plays music in aid of Mexican fruit pickers in Southern California.
Yes, you have fallen among wild-eyed idealists who believe in rainbow coalitions.
So it seems.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bravo! I've been thinking about this afternoon, Mr. Meredith. I've been thinking about apologies, plaques and memorials.
Did you reach any conclusions?
I was born in the north of England, in a small industrial town. In the town square, there's a statue to a man who was the mayor in Edwardian times. I went back last year and I noticed that somebody, probably what you would call the despot and the dispossessed, had spray-painted the plinth so you could no longer see the man's name. So I asked people passing by, "Do you know this man's name?" Nobody did. So there is a memorial to somebody, and nobody remembers him.
Do you know his name?
Oh, yes. His name was Fanshawe.
Your family?
My great-grandfather. And I didn't know whether to be angry or sad or resigned.
What did you decide?
I didn't decide anything, really. And then I come here today and discover another member of the family is remembered. And even the family have forgotten him. Conclusion? You can't order people to remember things. They'll remember what they want to remember.
Two more pints, and you'll be an honorary Welshman, Mr. Funshaw.
And if thou wilt remember, and if thou wilt forget.
That's lovely. What is it?
It's from a poem by Christina Rossetti. It's one we did at school. It's called When I Am Dead.
Oh. Was she Welsh?
No.
Because we love all that stuff. Death, doom, darkness. As long as it's gloomy and begins with D, we'll buy it wholesale. How does it go then, this poem?
Oh, let me see. To begin at the beginning.
Well played there, Mr. Funshaw.
When I am dead, my dearest, sing no sad songs for me. Plant thou no roses at my head, no shady cypress tree. Be the green grass above me, with showers and dewdrops wet. And if thou wilt, remember, and if thou wilt, forget.
That's a very beautiful thing. Thank you.
I didn't know I remembered that.
That's one of the reasons we come in this club. To sing the songs we thought we'd forgotten.
I've also been thinking about my ancestor. He came here to persuade you all to change your clocks by 11 minutes.
He was carrying out his master's bidding.
What a ludicrous errand.
Even so, I think my great-great-great-grandfather, what's the word, overreacted. Will you accept my apology?
Accepted unconditionally. My word, this beer is strong, isn't it?
Oh, yes. The magistrates have been known to accept it as a plea in court by way of mitigation.
Does the band play requests?
They're like all musicians. They play requests, but only if the people ask for them.
I thought it might be a meaningful gesture towards the Rainbow Coalition if I asked them to play an English tune.
Possibly, though I'd advise against Rule Britannia.
Maybe something with green in the title?
That should go down a treat.
Memo to Secretary, Parliamentary Conciliation Commission. As requested by the committee, I have carried out a detailed research project into the matter of Dick Penderyn, who was executed in the aftermath of the Merthyr riots. While this was clearly at worst a miscarriage, and at best a distortion of justice, I see no point in the committee taking the matter any further. Without consideration of the broader context of the Industrial Revolution as a whole. As was pointed out to me in Wales, there aren't enough apologies to go round. I will submit a more comprehensive report on the appropriate spreadsheet when my headache is better.
We welcome newly boarded passengers to this West Coast Express service from Swansea to London. In a few moments, we'll be passing the sites of Penderyn's Fountain and Fanshawe's Leap. These commemorate two martyrs of the Industrial Revolution, one Welsh and one English. This may or may not be of interest to passengers. If thou wilt, remember, and if thou wilt, forget. And for those who care about such matters, the train is running exactly to schedule. Local time.
In Time Added On for Injuries, Meredith was played by Alan David and Fanshawe by James Bolam. Time Added On for Injuries was written by Alan Plater and directed in Wales by Alison Hindle.